Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, folks, it's 3 minutes after 9 o'clock. We're all waiting. I think the entire country, anybody who knows that this is about to happen, I think is waiting in anticipation. So what we're waiting for is the president to announce the outcomes of the NEC meeting on coalition talks. You know, they've been sitting all day now. In fact, today at Birchwood Hotel in Boksburg, those discussions have been going on, and we are expecting the president to make that announcement. So, we are here. Hearing murmurs about it being a government of national unity, but we will finally get the president to tell us. But before we do that, because that could be any time, before we do that, I do have one of my favorite people on the planet in studio with us to perhaps ease us into the news, right? Perhaps ease us into the news. Leroy Mark, unfortunately, is not here, and he was available, but lots of moving parts. So what I'm going to do, we are going to be posting some of what Leroy Mark had planned for us. Apologies for all of you who've been waiting for Leroy Mark, but it's, lots of moving parts. That's kind of how politics has got us going at the moment. We are flexible, and we may not finish this conversation with Sheldon if the president comes on, but Sheldon is here now. Hello, Sheldon. Welcome to the weekend.
Hi, and what an honor to be here on such a momentous occasion.
Isn't it such it's a big moment, definitely a big moment. Yeah. So, are you sort of going to be celebrating this moment with us through music?
Exactly. Well,
right?
How cool. And actually, we selected the theme of like songs that bring us into a new light.
like right now.
Yes. So I think it's quite ironic. And we discussed this a few days ago. So actually, we didn't know that this was going to happen right now. So yeah. I think that's quite cool.
So we're going to go with a song that I think, yeah. I mean, it's one of those songs. Yeah. It's like an anthem.
It is an anthem.
A global anthem.
It is an anthem. So it's Bob Marley, Get Up, Stand Up.
As we have our conversation and in anticipation of the president's announcement on the outcomes of the NEC meeting that they've had as the ANC, any minute now, but we continue our conversation with Sheldon, because we're discussing music in this kind of vein, right?
Yeah,
so that
was
Bob Marley. Your reasons for picking Bob Marley?
So, well, Bob Marley was a revolutionary and a very political figure. Actually, when he passed away, he got a state funeral, so he was a significant character in Jamaica. This was the last album that Peter Tosh and Bunny Wailer and Bob Marley did together.
Yes.
It's from an album called Burnin' from 1973. And this album was like a big move towards like trying to move the sound of reggae into a more pop sound.
Mm.
And Bob Marley wrote the song whilst he was touring Haiti, and he was seeing the poverty there and, you know, how awful the people were living. And he was like, you know, you got to get up and stand up, and you got to fight for your rights and not wait for like one day to actually live your truth. You need to live your truth now. I mean, I guess that's what's happening in our political situation right now, which is people have finally said, we don't want to wait anymore. We've waited 30 years.
Mm.
And now we need to live our truths now. And I guess that was what the result of the elections was all about.
Mm.
This song is considered to be Bob Marley's most significant song ever. Rolling Stone said it was his most significant song. Rolling Stone magazine.
Mm.
The song is inducted into the National a library in the U.S. Mm. And it's also part of the Library of Congress, the Library of Congress in the United States. So it's a highly significant song. At the time that the song was released, Bob Marley then decided to go solo. So he went solo. He kept the name Bob Marley and the Wailers. And Chris Blackwell, who was his manager, record company owner, gifted him his house, his own personal house, which Bob Marley then turned into his headquarters.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
So it was called Tuff Gong Records, and he had his whole setup there. And that was Bob Marley. Bob Marley was a very significant character, and his message resonated with so many millions of people around the world.
Mm. And we continue in the same vein?
Yes.
Yeah.
So our other song is by a band called The Impressions. They were a band in the early 1960s, and they were often compared to bands like The Four Tops, The Temptations, etc. But they were from a different record company. They weren't part of Motown.
Mm.
And the lead singer in the band was a guy called Curtis Mayfield.
Mm.
And I love Curtis Mayfield.
Wow.
Yeah, it's absolute legend. And this song comes from an album called Young Mod's Forgotten Story, and the song is called Choice of Colors, and it talks about like the different permutations of society, that society is made up of so many different iterations of people with so many different views. Curtis Mayfield started off with The Impressions writing very like poppy songs, but towards the end of the 1960s, in the midst of the chaos that was happening in the world at the time, which was there was a civil rights movement, there was a feminist movement, there was the gay rights movement, mm. there was the assassination of Martin Luther King mm. and Malcolm X and John F. Kennedy, and there was just so much, and I think one of the biggest things was the Vietnam War, and people were so upset about the American government getting involved in things that had nothing to do with them, and now souls were getting lost in this war that had nothing to do with the people. And Curtis Mayfield started becoming a lot more conscious, like the music started becoming more conscious. And this is one of the last songs before Curtis Mayfield went solo. Mm. And when he went solo, he totally became like a civil rights leader in himself, like writing songs that shifted the narrative. Mm. And he was considered the voice of the civil rights movement as far as music was concerned. And so this song, the first time I actually heard it was like, I heard it like superficially around by Curtis Mayfield. But the first time I actually listened to it was a version by Gladys Knight,
mm.
which I just thought was so unbelievable. And I've actually seen Gladys Knight in person
wow.
on stage
wow.
and that wow. voice just wow. sent shivers down my spine. But this song is exceptional.
Well, there you have it. Isn't that something?
Yeah, and in that song he's talking about education, and he's talking about civil rights, and he's talking about a whole lot of different things, and that was the beauty of Curtis Mayfield and his contribution to music. Our next song, it's actually like, when I saw this performance, I was moved to tears because I was so moved by the backstory behind the song. So in 2009, Barack Obama becomes the president of the United States, the first African-American president of the country. And that was such a heavy moment, like a big moment, because You think about like the discrimination, the slavery, the segregation, the lack of rights, franchise, people didn't have the right to vote, and there he is, like in the seminal moment in the history of humanity, becoming the president of the most powerful country in the world, African American guy. And he got Aretha Franklin to come perform for him at this inauguration, and she performed a song called My Country, 'Tis of Thee. And that song was written in 1831 by a guy called Samuel Francis Smith, and it was essentially the national anthem of the United States mm. for the longest time, until about 1931, where they adopted the Star Spangled Banner as the mm. official American national anthem.
Mm.
And 1931 is not that long ago.
It's just yesterday. Yeah.
So to think that up to that point, there wasn't really an official, there were some patriotic songs, mm. and this was one of them. And this was the go-to song. And in 1843, they wrote like an abolitionist revision to the song in 1843. So 1843, also not that long ago. And there is Aretha Franklin performing this song, which was essentially a American national anthem from the 1800s, which is at the time of slavery. And there's this woman, this powerful, they called her a national treasure,
mm-hmm.
performing at the inauguration of an African-American president. I was just so moved beyond belief, like watching that performance and how the full circle had come around at that seminal moment with this specific song and what the significance and the gravitas of that song was. And so that's why I chose that song today. How amazing. And I always I always think of Aretha Franklin like the steam engine. Like she would take some time to get up there, but then once she was in full speed, you could not stop her. And this song, if you listen to it very carefully, you can hear that the melody of the song was stolen from God Save the Queen. God Save, God Save, which even adds more significance to the song because of the colonial past of Britain in the US and the slavery and all of that stuff all combined together to create this like iconic moment. Like her performance at that inauguration was exceptional. A few years later, about 8 years later, she was approached by Donald Trump when he came into power, and he asked if she would perform at his inauguration, and she turned him down, and she said no. That was a year before she passed away.
I had no idea.
Yeah,
I had no idea Donald Trump had asked.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, Donald Trump did a few things when he came into power that seemingly were designed to change the image of him. So one of them was
Kanye West.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, because
he was one of them.
Yeah. The other one was like trying to give a Congressional Medal of Honor to Dolly Parton, who had like a very significant, powerful presence in the United States as
an icon there.
Like a mother of the country. So she turned him down. And then she turned him down twice. And then he approached Aretha Franklin, who's considered a national treasure and had performed for Barack Obama.
Yes.
And she was like, oh, hell no, I'm not going to perform for you. And so, and a year later, she passed away, which very sadly, from cancer, which she'd been fighting for many years. And she already had it when she performed for Barack Obama. There had been all of these rumors that she had cancer. But she was a formidable woman, and also rose up at a time in the history of the United States where it was not the thing to do to stand up as a black woman in the United States at that time. You just played the game at that stage in the 1960s. Yeah, and she didn't. She was always a person who stood up for her convictions. The next song that we're doing is a Mango Groove song, Another Country. And the significance of this song is that it came out in 1993, a year before our first democratic elections. And the guy who wrote the song is a guy called Alan Lazar. He was one of the members of Mango Groove, and he wrote all of their big hits. And then in 1995, he left the country and moved to Los Angeles. And he still lives there today, where he became a score music composer. And he's written music for The Real Housewives of Orange County and Sex in the City. And so he's written for some big productions.
Yeah.
But he started off his career as a songwriter and producer. And he was a member of Mango, one of the original members of Mango Groove. And the band was moved to produce this album called Another Country, and then the song Another Country, that's the song we're going to listen to, thinking about like the situation in South Africa at the time. There'd been the Boy Patong murders that had occurred, 45 people died. There was the unrest, the Chris Hani assassination. There was like a whole lot of turmoil in the country. People thought that it was the end of the world as we knew it, you know, like everything was going to collapse. And there was ANC versus IFP, like insurrections, and it was just a mess. People were in the shops buying canned food because they were like, we don't know. This whole country could implode.
I remember it so well.
And there was so much fear-mongering.
Toilet paper.
Yeah, yeah. And that seems to be the South African go-to. COVID, toilet paper.
Yes.
Insurrections, toilet paper.
It was tin stuff.
The EFF. Invading Johannesburg, toilet paper. It seems to be like where you go to get toilet paper. And so the band decided that they wanted to do more of like an optimistic like an optimistic experience of what the country was going to be, you know. And so the song Another Country is an optimistic song. It's about, you know, everything's going to be okay, we're going to be cool, you know, we're going to make it, we're going to see another country kicking in, it's going to be fine, don't worry about it. And they decided to, you know, pursue a message of positivity as opposed to all the negativity that was around at the time. And so that's what Another Country is all about.
I mean, this is one of those, as you said, you know, it came at a time in this country when everything was so euphoric.
Yeah.
And it was like, ooh.
Well, I mean,
who thought we would be here?
Yeah. I think once Nelson Mandela came into power, there was euphoria. And I think the way that the transitional government was handled, where it was like a transitional, like, government of unity and yada, 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 I think it allayed a lot of people's concerns. That being said, if we look at our current situation, it looks like we're back there again. You know, it looks like we're going to go back to that 1994 situation.
Yeah.
Which is ironic. 30 years later, we're back where we started, which is great because from there you can build something and hopefully there will be prosperity at the end of all of this for everybody concerned. I think the song that encapsulates that moment, and I think it's quite poignant to have a look at where we are now and in relation to that song.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Alan Azar, who wrote that song or co-wrote that song with John Layden, also wrote "African Dream" for Vicky Sampson, which is also another iconic South African song.
Same writer,
same author. So that's quite interesting. Our next song is by an iconic African musician called Fela Kuti.
Yeah.
And he seems to influence, like every time I do like a something about international artists or local artists, everyone's inspired by Fela Kuti, an iconic Nigerian artist. This specific song is called "Water No Get Enemy." Are you going to play it?
Yes. That is so cool. So cool.
It's got like a Latin, Latino vibe, cool. And you can hear where the Afro beats tradition has come from because it's like it's sitting right there in the music.
As cool as the singer.
Yeah, and it was 1974. And the dude had charisma. He had riz, baby.
Yeah.
He was like a charismatic.
A little bit like, do you think he was a bit like Elvis?
Definitely. And he apparently got a lot of his inspiration from James Brown.
I see it now.
But much cooler than James, because James Brown was like very like high energy, like he had too much cocaine.
He was also hot.
Yeah. And Fela was like more of a chill, like smooth operator. This song comes from the title of the song comes from a Yoruba proverb concerning the power of nature. And basically it says that we live in harmony with nature and you will live longer if you work with nature. He also suggests that if the Nigerian political opposition worked with nature, they would have ultimate victory in the end, and that's what the song was about.
His music was always so political.
Very political. And he was also a bit of a disruptor.
Of course.
So, like, he got bussed by some police, which led to the writing of the song, and he had a joint with him. So what he did is he just swallowed the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
And landed up going, being incarcerated, and then they interrogated him.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
He was like, I don't do anything wrong. And eventually they had to let him go because they had no evidence.
And he was
And he was, but I mean, shame the guy. I mean, he also didn't have a great end. I mean, it was quite a sad end. One of our first African people who lost their lives to AIDS.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. But this iconic figure who has been an inspiration to so many artists around the world because of, I think, the earnestness of. Of his creative output, that what he did was truthful and honest to who he was.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key factor in anybody's success. If you are true to what you do, then that cream will always rise to the top.
It's that authenticity.
Yeah.
because he didn't sound and he wasn't like anyone else. He was just purely himself.
And the thing is, he would have probably been pressured to sound more like, you know, sound more American or whatever. Yeah. And I think if you look at the big artists of the world, they are people who have gone, this is what I want to do.
This is me.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be the next Michael Jackson because he's already got that market covered. I'm going to be authentically what I am. Is it African grooves? Is it Latino grooves or whatever it is?
And oftentimes when an artist bets on themselves,
yeah,
that's when you start seeing the big
indeed
success.
Indeed. And my thing, I mean, I see so many people who are interested in pursuing careers in music and whatever. And then you ask them, you know, what are your future plans? And they'll say to you, you know, my plan A is to be a musician and my plan B is to be an accountant. And then I'm like, but bruh,
you shouldn't have plan B.
You've already failed. Your plan A has already failed because actually your plan A is plan B. Mm. You know, like if you've got a plan B, that's actually your main focus and not plan A because you're basically telling me that plan A has already failed. Mm. So the thing with all of these iconic figures is that there was never a plan B.
Yeah.
Plan A was it. That was it.
And also they were in tune with who they authentically wanted to sound like themselves.
Exactly.
Often those people who are, and I'm sure you've seen the boy groups, girl groups, who are a project, Spice Girls.
Yeah.
It just doesn't last.
No.
It's nice and fun for that time.
Exactly.
But it's someone's project. It's not authentically them.
No.
Doesn't
and
work.
It's hot for a minute, you know, like it's really, it like burns hot.
The
like
marketing
Spice Girls
machine works very well.
It does. And I mean, if you put some clever marketing behind it and pretty looks and sell some sex, then you're going to get big numbers. I mean, the Spice Girls were massive. Two albums, their first two albums sold 40 million units around the world. Huge. But were they able to stand the test of time as individuals? That is the question at the end of the day. Are you going to be able to outlive that?
You're being unkind. One was a reality show. Air Star.
Yes.
Another one, Mary David Beckham.
Yes, and she lived a very fruitful life out of that one.
That's their biggest success.
Yeah. Then there was Ginger. Shame.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And Mel C. She also.
No, Mel C is the reality star.
No, wasn't that Mel G? Mel G, the girl, Scary
Mel
Spice with
the
big hair.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So
Mel C was the one who actually had the music career. Yeah. She released like 8 albums. So she did quite well.
See how little solo. I know.
But the rest of them.
See how little
it was. It's touch and go.
What happened to Ginger?
Ginger also, she also had a successful solo career for a period of time.
I have to just tell everybody who's not watching you right now.
Jerry Halliwell.
Your face, nah? Your face says, yeah, Ginger, like you are convincing yourself that Ginger.
I mean, the music wasn't great.
Actually had a career. But this is you saying, yeah, Ginger had a thing. Like,
for a hot minute.
And,
it wasn't, I mean, so convincing. It's not going to be inducted into the Library of Congress. You know, I don't think it's going to get any long-standing awards. In 25 years' time, people are not going to remember it. But, I mean, it was happening for a period of time.
And what are we going to remember David Beckham's wife for? For fashion.
Yes.
For more than anything. More than her music, fashion.
To be honest.
She's got a fashion label, no?
Yeah, she does. And but Victoria Beckham actually, I think, made David Beckham.
No. I don't think her success comes from him.
Yeah.
I think her fashion is a big thing.
Exactly.
It's that fashion label, I think, is doing incredibly well.
And also she had an eye to take David from a kid into a sellable product. I think she packaged David Beckham.
She's the one who branded him.
She's the one who branded him. Exactly. I mean, you can play the best soccer in the whole world, but if you have nothing to sell, no one cares about you. Mm. You know, like you can bend it like whoever you want, but you have to have something that's marketable, and she gave him that edge.
We got our next song?
So our next song is a bit of a random one. It's Ghetto Superstar. It features one of my favorite rappers, ODB, Old Dirty Bastard, from the Wu-Tang Clan.
I think the young people don't know what you're talking
about. Oh, really? He was like the coolest rapper ever. And the Wu-Tang Clan were an iconic hip-hop band. And the other two are Praz Michelle and Wyclef Jean featuring Maya. Now, Maya is this phenomenal singer who never really got the credit that she deserved because she landed up singing mostly backing for Jennifer Lopez. Mm. Well, actually, she was Jennifer Lopez's voice for the longest time.
But you are now throwing shade.
No, well, I mean, that's the truth.
Jennifer Lopez never sang her own song.
Well, people say that they were doubling up the voices, and that doubled up voice was Maya. And
that
so
is hilarious.
They actually wanted to use Mary J. Blige on this mm-hmm. recording, but when ODB heard Maya's debut album, he was like, "You've got to use this girl on this track, Ghetto Superstar." And the song is about it was a theme song for a movie called Bullworth, mm-hmm. which featured Warren Beatty in it, and it was about politics and mm-hmm. the political environment in the United States, and mm-hmm. was a critically acclaimed movie. But the other interesting thing is that Praz Michelle, Wyclef Jean and Lauryn Hill, who were part of the Fugees, had this very acrimonious relationship. And over the years, there's been talk. Well, the Fugees were a massive
yes.
band. I mean, their album, The Score, is an iconic album in music history. But they were constantly fighting with each other and actually resulted in the end of the band. And then for years, there's been talk that the Fugees were going to reunite, but they never reunited, and mainly because of the squabbling between the three members. But this does not include Lauryn Hill. Instead, they've got Maya in here and my favorite rapper, ODB, in the house.
Just people mustn't judge you or me.
No, they mustn't judge
us. For this
us.
Particular song.
No.
Because, yes, we had freedom and election songs
exactly.
and whatever, but this is just freeing the mind.
Exactly, and just having a little fun, hilarious moment, comedic moment. Because you can also be a ghetto superstar.
Absolutely.
You can also be a star from anywhere. You
Absolutely.
Can be a star from any place in the world, and a ghetto is as good as any other place.
You know we love you.
Exactly.
We are going to be seeing you next week.
Thank you, ma'am, Thanks. And have a lovely weekend.
Thank you, Sheldon. See you guys next week, Monday at 8 o'clock.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.